Well, hello and welcome to this Innovation Forum webinar supported by Bayer. Thank you so much for your support. My name is Toby Webb. I'm the founder of a company called Innovation Forum. We've been going for about 10 years or so, but before that we ran another similar business, and we're an independent, I guess maybe a media company you might call us, who focuses on publishing analysis content, podcasts, webinars, and we run lots of conferences and produce research. And we help companies engage with stakeholders. And that's what we're doing today. We'd like to hear your views about how we can best enable soil regeneration and carbon farming. And so we have titled this webinar Beneath the Surface, Exploring Best Practices for Soil Regeneration and Carbon Farming. And for a quick introduction, I shall turn over to Lionel Alexandre from Bayer Crop Science. Thank you for your support, Lionel, and looking forward to hearing a bit of an opening introduction from you.
Thank you, Toby. Welcome, everyone. We are extremely glad to welcome you today to this forum and to this great conversation. Just to give you a little bit of background and quickly to introduce this, why we are here today and why we came to this idea is probably some of you know that Bayer is a major player in the ag business, and we aim to help the transformation of agriculture. So we want to be this part of this game changer because the world is definitely moving very fast. We want to bring impactful also activities and help growers and the overall industry to address the future challenge of agriculture. And for that, of course, sustainability and climate change are one of the essential pieces of the puzzle. Why? Is because definitely climate change do impact the world in general. And that's, of course, we all want to care for our future generation and our kids and the future of our kids, but also because climate change is also bringing huge impact on the capability of producing for our growers. We are hearing about floodings, about drought, and that's something that is really, really getting more and more frequent, and we want definitely to help solving this challenge. And we aim to bring the support to the entire value chain, and we know the entire value chain has more and more commitment to support this climate change, and we want to be there, and we want to bring the right tool. And so to achieve this target, let's say we have been developing across the globe in all the regions from North America, Latin America, EMEA, and Asia Pacific, a global carbon program in Bayer that aims to help the overall value chain and the food value chain to reduce their impact and to help them to reduce the impact on the planet. And for that, there are three main pillars that will be basically the three, let's say, chapter of this series of webinars. One is linked to agronomy, everything linked to the growers and how the grower can leverage their land and their soil to support this climate change mitigation. The second one is linked to monitoring, reporting, and verification that include all the digital capabilities we have in our hands and the models that should be used to best predict the future and best address the question. And the last one is, of course, about the project management and everything linked to certification of this project and the value creation that we can have in the end. So with that, I will close my intro. I think today we are focusing on agronomy. We have an amazing set of panelists here today. We are really glad to welcome them. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lionel. We asked you to go first to set a bit of context for us. So perhaps in one sentence, tell those who don't know what the International 4 per 1,000 initiative is. And then really interested to hear from you over the next 5 minutes on some context for this and where we're headed. Paul.
Thank you very much. The 4 per mil initiative has a funny name, and it came at COP21 in Paris in 2015. The idea was just to promote carbon sequestration in soil to fight climate change and increase food security. So it's now a 800 partners and members initiative, worthwhile, and also multi-stakeholder partnership, which is working on that subject, which is one of the unique partnership in that time. That's for the presentation, but I can go further, of course. People ask me to context setting this webinar. I was asked three questions to answer. The first one was, what are the key challenges farmers are facing today? I can divide those challenges in two categories. I would say the first one are the challenges linked to the climate change. We talk about drought, flood, extreme positive and negative temperatures, storm, winds, and so on, with abnormal intensity and higher frequency. So this will become a little bit more and more the normality, I would say, and we have to cope to that. This impacts and affects the wider ecosystem in which the farmers' agro-system are working. In this category, we can find also the condition, the degradation of production condition linked to soil erosion, by the wind, by the water. This is the consequence of the first one, but not only, resulting in loss of fertility and the disappearance of rarefaction of crops auxiliaries, like pollinating insects, earthworm, and some other very, very helpful companion of the agriculture. So some of these challenges are impacting the farmers' work, but they are also generated in the farmers' work. This is important to understand that. But some of those factors are not finding their origin in the farmers' work. So it means that we need to be careful about that and consider that the farmers are contributing also to degrade their own environment. Then the second category of challenge, I would say, are linked to the market. They are linked with the relation to access to the production tools, land, mechanization, machinery, and so on, but also difficulties with the upstream intermediaries, all the supplier of various inputs, seeds, animal genetic, and so on, and the downstream intermediary, like the cooperative, the various buyer, processor, distributor, consumer, and so on. Almost all those challenges in this category are beyond the influence of the farmers. And so it's difficult for them to control that. They all impact the production cost and purchase price, catching the farmers in an uncontrollable scissor effect that can deem them to desperation. And to complete the list, which is not the least one, and I would say the society crisis of confidence in the producer are also something very important that influence the farmers, because the farmers are most of the time being accused to be the polluter of the water, of the soil, of the air, and the products, the food, and so on. So it's really a very difficult situation, and farmers are really challenged by all of those. Why in this context is it so important to maximize soil health? In this context, we need to understand that soil health is really at the roots of the solution to the major problem and challenges that humanity is facing. So a healthy soil, a carbon-rich soil that can help fighting climate change. This is also a soil rich in organic matter, full of life and biodiversity that can support high biodiversity system ecosystem above the soil. They are also rich in organic matter that allow the soil to absorb more water and used by the plant, and also be less sensitive to the erosion by wind and water. And also, of course, it's a fertile soil, allowing agricultural production on the long run and with a stabilized yield. So that is why soil health is really the minimum basis to reach the objective of the 3 UN Convention and the FAO organization objective. This is really the mayor of our work, and we need to work on that. And it is very interesting to notice that a small number of countries, only 28 on 184, have mentioned soil organic carbon and soil in their NDCs for the climate change UN convention. This is not very satisfactory, but it's also important to notice that since 2015, awareness on the importance of soil and soil health to combat climate change, but also desertification and also erosion of biodiversity and also food insecurity are growing more and more generally. And at the last COP in Dubai, we were very happy to find out that the United Arab Emirates Declaration on Sustainable Agriculture, Resilient Food System and Climate Action was adopted by 159 head of states, which is a very good signal. So, the last point that they asked me to develop in a few seconds is the carbon farming. What is the carbon farming, and why should we be looking at this more closely? It is important to notice that the carbon farming is just a reference to a set of agricultural techniques and methods used to absorb CO2 from the atmosphere via the process of photosynthesis and to sequester the carbon in the soil and in plant crops. And more broadly, I would say, this is my addition, in organic agricultural products that are not consumed in the short term or in the field. So it's very important to have this in mind. And promoting the carbon sequestration in soil through appropriate form of agriculture as part of agroecology is precisely the raison d'être of the 4 per mille initiative that I presented shortly to you at the beginning of my speech. We have a strategic plan, 2050, which is structured in 24 objectives, and that covers a broad spectrum of topics to be addressed from 2020 up to the 30 years to 2050. And our vision is a worldwide healthy and carbon-rich soil to combat climate change and end hunger. So in concrete terms, this means that we need to enable farmers from all over the world to fully play their role as key players in the fight against climate change by implementing agroecological practices in the field. And this is the picture you have in your screen. This is the way we understand agroecology. This is a movement that brings us out of the conventional agriculture, which seems to be to have a little bit too much externality, negative externality, and that we can promote various kind of agriculture, like conservation agriculture, organic agriculture, biodynamic, and so on, that are belonging to the agroecological system. So we need to reconnect the farmers with the ecosystem in which the farm operates, with the socioeconomic context in which they evolve, and with the consumer, who are their ultimate customer. And for the benefit of the society and the environment, this is not for us an option. This is not a possibility. It's an obligation to succeed in this transition, for which farmers need to be supported technically, it was said before, and economically with the appropriate tools and expertise. So that's over for me. Thank you.
Paul, thank you very much. Excellent job on context setting. Florence, let me turn to you. Two questions for you to answer here. What is Bayer doing currently in relation to carbon farming, and how are we going to make it a profitable venture for farmers like Andrew here, who's joining us to speak a bit later?
Thank you. Hello, everybody. And thank you, Paul, for the carbon farming definition. This is really helpful. I just would like to add one thing. It's sequestration of the carbon in the soil. This is key, but also the GHG emission reduction. So we have both in carbon farming. In Bayer, we are not working only on carbon farming, but we are looking at all the practices we are able to achieve sustainable goals, like climate change, but not only. This is also including regenerative agriculture to improve the soil health. You mentioned that, Paul, and thank you. The resilience of the farm, but also the farmer incomes. So to answer your question, Toby, what we are doing in Bayer, we provide to the food chain company some expertise to manage carbon or regenerative agriculture project. Concretely, what is it? We always start with the feasibility study. Without that, we are not able to understand the local context, to talk with the farmer, knowing more about the local practices and the reason of these practices. Because it's you always have a reason. And if you don't understand the reason, you cannot help the farmer to change the practices. To be able to understand this potential, the best is to start the data collection with a representative sample of growers. We just achieved in Poland a feasibility study with 77 growers. It was quite a good number to represent the region of this project. We learn always during this phase, this feasibility study phase. We learn about the local context, yes, but also the best practices to advise. We adjust the project management also. So this phase is absolutely essential to have a clear picture of the coming journey. So after that, project management, of course, including MRV and digital environment, but not only. The farmer is in the center of this journey. Personalized agronomic advice at field level is essential, but we also need to adapt this advice to the farmer constraints. This is the guarantee of the success. Without that, you cannot build a win-win project. And a win-win project and a strong value proposal for the farmer, it's why a project is sustainable. Because we are talking not about short-term projects, but long-term projects. So win-win, a lot of benefits for the farmer, not only practices focusing on carbon farming and carbon sequestration or reduction of emission, but on all the co-benefits. And sometimes you need to adapt the advice. For example, last year in Poland, the summer was very dry, so impossible to drill any cover crop. So the best solution is to implement companion crop in this case. But you need a very good relation with the farmer to understand all this context. One more thing, and maybe Andrew, you can talk more about that later, but it's a risk management, because a change, it's a risk for the farmer. A farmer alone, it's a lot of pressure, a lot of risk to manage alone. Having face-to-face discussion on agronomy, but also propose some solution to share the risk and provide a network of farmers to talk about some tests, some trials, the experiences, and share all of that. And of course, we're talking about training, but this network, because Together Stronger, is also part of this successful way to carbon farming or regenerative agriculture. Yes, in carbon project or regenerative agriculture project, we are working a lot with data in equivalent CO2 per ton or per hectare, but we are also working with human in a specific context, with a specific market or policy, re-adapt the project, talk with a farmer, learn, adjust. This is absolutely key. So this is what we are doing and bring a lot of benefits also to the farmers. This is the basics on our project.
Florence, thank you. Andrew, we've just put you up here saying farmer, but as we discussed before we started, you do a lot more than that. There's a lot going on to run a farm. Why don't you just start us off with a very kind of quick overview, one sentence or two. What are you farming? Where are you farming? And then let's talk a bit more about what you've learned and what you're experiencing at the moment.
Thank you, Toby. So we are based in South Shropshire, which is on the western side of England, between Birmingham and the Welsh border. We are arable farmers. We grow wheat, barley, oats, oilseed rape, and beans. We also have some grassland, and we also run several environmental schemes on the same land area. And our land area, total land area, is around about 365 hectares of area we farm at the moment.
Well, we're going to talk a bit about the challenges you faced, and I know you've had a huge amount of rain this year. And then let's talk a bit more about how you're working with Bayer, what you've learned, and what do you think companies like Bayer and others need to do to take this further? So let's start out with the challenges briefly, and then let's get into what you've been doing.
The biggest challenge at the moment for us is obviously the climate, is the weather, and how that's changing and how it's affecting places. We would normally have our average rainfall in this part of the world is around about 750 to 800 millimetres of rain. Last year, we had over 1,000 millimetres. And it's not just the amount, it's how we get it. It comes in big doses, and then we'll then have dry spells and droughts. Well, not droughts, I don't like using that word, because lots of other people in the world have proper droughts. We just have dry spells. But then the other really big impact affecting our business in the last probably 3 years is market volatility. And that's affected everyone with regard to input costs. Marketing, our price we're selling things for, the energy price, the fuel price, all that sort of thing. It's just had a massive effect. And every decision, Florence talked about risk, and every decision we make at the moment just carries a greater level of risk. There's a greater risk of getting it wrong or right. And that's really quite challenging, really, in that sense. So to go back to a little bit regarding the carbon project. So the reason why I wanted to get involved with the carbon project with Bayer, we've done quite a lot of work with Bayer previously on different projects over the last 10 to 12 years, probably. We're already doing quite a lot of things. So we've been using cover crops for the last 10 years. We've been direct drilling, conservation agriculture, no-till, whatever you want to call it. There's lots of different names for it. Since 2018, we use companion crops as well, which Florence mentioned. So we are doing a lot of the things that the wider industry and the general public perceive to be the right thing to do. And I put a lot of emphasis on that point of perceive, because we don't exactly know whether it is right or wrong at the moment, but we're trying to do what we do. We are trying to look after the environment. We're trying to grow food to feed the population and look after the environment that we all live in. But that environment is also our factory floor. It would be very unwise of us as farmers to try and destroy that factory floor, because it's what we live off. It's what we do. Part of the reason I wanted to get involved with the Bayer is because I wanted to try and understand where we are now with regard to carbon. There's an awful lot of talk about carbon markets and sustainability. Where are we? I think we're quite good at what we do. And I want to find out how we measure what we're doing better, get better metrics on it, and then to see what we need to change and how we can improve things, and then how potentially we can use that to our advantage to access future markets. Because there's no doubt that we're going to be, in the future, we're going to be selling more than just food, and we can do an awful lot. And Paul mentioned it, agriculture is in a fairly unique position where it can also, not only can it have an effect on the climate, but it has a massive a benefit to change things around and improve things. So we're an industry which can do both, which is quite unique.
I was going to ask you about cover crops as well, Andrew.
So we've used cover crops for 10 years, as I said. One of the big challenges we have with cover crops is timeliness of getting them established. Because we are slightly later to harvest, our main harvest would be mid-August to mid-September. And we, in the past, if we can get cover crops established well in August, they do well. Once you tip into September, then they just don't do as well as before. So we've tried different things with mixes within RAGT, within the project. We've tried establishing them into growing crops in different sorts there, but it just happened to be that year was a particularly dry harvest. So it didn't dry because it didn't grow because it was too dry. Last year, they didn't grow because it was too wet. But we need to make sure we understand what we're trying to achieve with the cover crops and also the gain of them. Because I think when cover crops first came out, when we started using them 10 years ago, they were a panacea and they could do absolutely everything for you all of the time. And we know that's not true. But we need to focus on what we can do with them and have a more open mind with regard to that. Companion crops we use as well. And part of that is through necessity. We use companion crops started off with oilseed rape. And part of that was to combat the level of cabbage stem flea beetle that we have now in the UK because we're not allowed to use neonicotinoid seed dressings any longer. It's a problem we didn't used to have, but we've had to try and find a solution. And that is quite a good solution.
Thank you. In case we don't get a chance to ask you this later, I'll ask you now, Andrew. Where do you want to be with this in 5 years? And what's it going to take to get you there?
I would like to be able to monetize what we're doing more. I think we should be getting paid for what we do to protect the environment. I don't think we should be doing it for nothing. And I certainly don't think we should be letting the stakeholders and our consumers assume again all that benefit, which they will then market to their end consumers without us gaining from it personally as a primary producer. So I think we need to understand where that comes from. We need to make sure we can get the right metrics. But the other thing I'm very concerned about is making sure we can prove and quantify and certify that what we think we're doing on the land is actually correct. And that's part of the reason why I wanted interested in this project of an inset inversion as opposed to an offset inversion, because I think that there's a lot out there and I don't want to be someone coming to me in 10 years' time, say, well, Andrew, all that carbon you sold me wasn't quite there. You need to buy it back.
Yes, it's a fascinating area. I mean, some people posit that insetting is the business model for regen agriculture in the future. That's yet to be determined, but it's certainly a fascinating area where you have more traceability of carbon and other impacts. So, Antoine, over to you. You might just want to do the kind of one-liner on your organisation before you get into some comments about cover crops and the work you do on seeds.
Thank you, Toby. I'm very glad to present my company, RAGT, who is based in the southwest of France, like myself. And I think you hear it with my English. RAGT select, produce, and sells seeds worldwide. We select more than 30 species. And we are mainly known as a straw cereal leader in European market and mainly for the malt barley varieties in Europe. But we are also known as RAGT as a leading company for the breeding of cover crop. We call it a soil health plant. RAGT have a portfolio of more than 100 varieties registered in Europe, where we are a leader in this case, and we are mainly focused on brassica, mainly like mustard, for example, or radish, to manage the pest and the disease, the soil disease mainly, with this kind of species. And we believe, so we have more than 100 varieties registered in Europe, and we believe that diversity, we need this diversity to provide to the farmer all the services we expect from cover crop, and also to adapt our portfolio to all kinds of climate. Andrew said it, we have a lot of climate challenges like the drought or the too much wet rain in some cases, and we need a large and a wide portfolio to answer to all these needs. So that's it for RGT, and maybe I can go more deep in the cover crop topic. And in RGT, we think cover crop should not be seen as a cost, but should be seen as an investment. All the benefits of cover crop, it's very large. We have all kinds of benefits, and Paul already listed some kind of benefit. But sometimes it's very difficult to quantify economically the benefit. It's more a systemic question, the benefit for cover crop. And we need to see it as a Swiss knife, for example. You can have the cheap Swiss knife with only two tools, and you have also the expensive one with a lot of tools. And in this case, you can choose what kind of tools you want to use. And this is exactly the same case for cover crop. You need to be clear and to define it clearly which kind of services you want to use with cover crop. And like that, you increase your chance of success because you know what you want, so you know what you want to use. But at the end, using cover crop to increasing the organic matter in the soil is always a good choice because we know that increasing organic matter in the soil with cover crop is the best way to combine all the benefits like fertilizer, soil protection, pest control, for example. If you want only one benefit like pest control, for example, maybe you don't care of the green manure effect or of the soil structure because you use also mineral fertilizer or mechanic soil tools. But we know organic matter increase, for example, the stability of aggregate in the soil, like also it will increase also the soil water or nitrogen retention capacity. You need to understand one thing also, cover crop will not answering to the carbon farming because you need to see cover crop like a pump, like for water, for example. When you want to use water, you need a pump to take it and then after to use it. And cover crop, it's a pump and it's not a storage for the carbon. So the cover crop will take the carbon, the CO2, and then after it will put it in the soil. But after it's up to you to know what you want to make it. If you want to work the soil, you will lose all the carbon the cover crop will catch. It's not a marvelous tool, the cover crop. It's only one tool and you need to use it well. For that, you have two levers to pull to increase the stock of organic matter in the soil by cover crop. You need to make biomass, and more is always better. And to make biomass, you need to answer to the question, how to sow? To make more biomass, when you sow it well, at the end, you will have more biomass. And then after, you need to manage the carbon and nitrogen ratio in the cover crop. And for that, you need to answer to the question, what to sow? Because according to what you will sow, you will have different quality of what you will put in the soil, to make some images. If we want to define cover crop, it's a solution to produce biomass between two cash crops at a certain place during a certain time. According to crop rotation, place and time can change. The farmer who want to maximize the production of cover crop need to know very well the crop rotation, and that will give us the usable timing for cover crop. Then it's our job as a breeding company to provide to them the good varieties who will fit in this crop rotation box with the good services. It's always a balance between which kind of species I can use between this during this time and which services I will have with them. And if it's not well managed, the cover crop could not provide the services and so will increase drastically the profit, will decrease drastically the profitability and also increase the cost. This is where we need to put a good advice to the farmer to only focus on services and good success of our product. And so to make our cover crop attractive, we need to make them attractive by the results and not by the regulation. The regulation can help, but as you understand, the cover crop is more complex than the regulation shows them. Our main challenge is to transfer knowledge to the farmer. And if we have a very good knowledge of our varieties, we need to combine it with expertise in agriculture machinery, for example, fertilizer also, or phytosanitary product, because each of these shareholders have a big impact on the cover crop performance results. And so we need to build a strong network to grow the competence of all of them. That's the aim of our relationship with Bayer, to use multiple good tools in this systemic question, with the end goal to provide an good advice to the farmer and to make a cover crop a success.
Great, Antoine, thank you so much. I'm going to take bits of different questions and put them to different speakers for the sake of efficiency. So, Paul, let me start with you. There's a point here about, do we agree on a definition of soil health? What are your thoughts on this?
There's a question on the definition in general about regenerative agriculture definition as well and soil health. So we have definition for all those words. There is an international panel on soil that is linked to FAO, which give a clear definition of soil health, which is in fact the capacity of the soil to provide services to the environment and to human activity. So it's quite wide, but there is a definition. And also, there are also definitions on regenerative agriculture. And there are some work done by a mixture of NGOs and large company provided by under the collaboration of OP2B. And they reach an agreement, I understood, about the definition of regenerative agriculture. And it's true that if we are not having a common definition of wording, it will be impossible for us to speak on the same language and go in the same direction. So this is very important to have that. I just would like to stress one or two answers that I can pick up on the question very quickly, Toby, about the fact that the carbon market is part of the solution, but it's not all the solution. And the carbon market is really shaped by the question about the how we can store carbon in wood and forest. And we got a lot of ambition on that. It was not really really successful by the past. And we need to be careful about the soil. But the permanency of carbon in the soil are the same that permanency of carbon in the stem of a forest. We have experienced this year and the previous year that you just have a spark and the forest disappear in a minute. So it's about the same with carbon in the soil. It's less visible because the forest is very visible, but in the soil, it's not so visible. But if you start changing your practice that helps storing carbon in the soil, then you will lose your soil. And for instance, if you are tilling your soil, you will lose the carbon. And that is why I want to also build on what was said by Antoine. Cover crops is very interesting, but it's only one part of the minimum solution. And the minimum solution is the conservation agriculture concept, where you have no tillage or direct sowing, cover crops or mulching, and rotational of crops, which is very important. If you take only one of those elements out of the system, it will not be so efficient in terms of carbon storage. And I agree with Antoine, you need to be careful about that. The other question was about agroecology and if this is a solution. Agroecology is, as you can understand that with my only slide that I show, it's a mixture of various agriculture solution. So it's not a unique solution. It's a capacity to have various categories of agriculture, starting from conservation agriculture to regenerative agriculture or to agroforestry. And of course, all of them could be more specific to a certain category of production. And so it was said in one of the questions, we don't have to divide the world in part where we made intensive cropping and the other one will make extensive cropping or livestock or whatever. I think it's more complex than that. But it's also, we need also to trust the farmers to make the right choice, but we need to give them information on the technical aspect and economical aspect of the work.
Thank you, Paul. Andrew, over to you. When you talk to other farmers, is there a common understanding of what you all mean by soil health?
The simple answer is no. Every farmer will have a different perspective on what they see as healthy soil or what they want to achieve. And a concern for that is that it is used by government. It's a thing that's mentioned often. We need to improve soil health. We need better soil health. Before we do that, we need to define what soil health is. And Paul's defined it. It's definable, but how do you then quantify it? And how do you then decide where you go and take your sample to baseline it? Our soils are very variable, and it'll be different from one side of the farm to another, from one side of the field to another. It's very different, and all farmers will have a slightly different view of what they determine as good soil health. But we all ultimately want to improve the health of our soil because it's what we survive on, both environmentally, socially, economically. So we need to make sure it's getting better.
Thank you, Andrew. Florence, a question here about measurement and monitoring. We talked about soil sampling and so on, but that, as Andrew says, that can be quite challenging given soil and weather variations. What are some of the tools you're using to get a sense of whether or not your partnership with Andrew and others is actually working?
Yes, we are several partners who are working on this modelization part. The best is always to start with a soil sample, but it's not so easy, as Andrew said. It's not possible to just do one sample per field. To be very accurate, you need to have a look on the field before. One sample per 5 hectares could work in certain situations, in some other not. So adaptation is the most important thing to do. So, and following exactly at the same GPS point, the carbon, the organic matter in the soil, but not only, all the biologic fertility, all the chemical fertility, and of course the structure of the soil. So model can help, but this is a so complex environment. Soil, practices, all these interactions are very heavy to modelize. So yes, to follow the evolution with models, but we absolutely need to do real sample to have real data. We try to change the tool depends of our customer needs and also depends of the type of project. A perfect tool for everything, it's a dream, of course, but maybe not the reality.
And what's the role of remote sensing in doing this? You know, I've come across these companies who claim that from the air, from the sky, they can assess up to a certain number of centimeters of soil carbon using AI analysis and very close observation. What's your experience of those sorts of technologies being, Florence?
That's great technology, but like model, to follow an evolution, to choose maybe the best place for the soil sample, okay, but soil, it's not on the surface. It's more complex. So yes, to use all these tools, it's really useful, but it's so complex and you need to do real soil sample. So in my experience is that can help, but it's not the reality.
Andrew, yeah. You wanted to respond to this or the previous point?
Yeah, just sort of go back to what Florence said about the testing. So we did some fairly rigorous soil testing as part of the project, and it is the most rigorous soil testing we've done of any ever on to get a baseline, looking at various things and done by the scientists involved. The level of information we got from that is good, but also we are one of 5 farmers in the UK within this project, and we looked at all our data together, and the data is very, very variable, and the levels of soil organic carbon is very variable. One of the very interesting things that come out of ours is even though we've got relatively low soil organic carbon of around about 3% compared to some other people who are on sort of 7, 8, 9% because their soil type is different, we're actually getting quite close to the amount of soil that we can hold based on the clay content in our soil. We will never, ever get to 8, 9% like some people to have a level playing field. If the government said, right, you have to have 5% soil organic matter in your soil, otherwise you can't get this payment, we're never going to get there. So that's one of the things. And then the other thing you mentioned briefly about the remote sensing. We've done an awful lot of work with precision farming. It's part of my background. And we did have a company look at remote sensing, trying to test soil organic carbon on the 2 fields within the project. And they were within 90% of what we did from the soil sampling. So potentially there is scope there. It's new technology. But again, that would then give us a lot of information.
That's really interesting. Paul, I'm going to come to you now.
MRV are very complex and they are very, very tools. I mean, you have remote sensing, you have sensor in the field, you have direct measurement like soil analysis. You have also model that you can develop. And the ideal solution, as Florence said, it's a kind of mixture of all of that. Of course, remote sensing by itself is not sufficient. You need to control what you have. You can see by remote sensing, but you need to measure at the level of the field. And as Andrew said, they are more and more reliable if we mix several of those tools to make a more complex one. We are going in that direction and we are very good hope because remote sensing is very cheap and it will be, and it's not destructive. So it would be very, very good and convenient to follow what the farmers are doing. Also, another thing is that we are more and more going for result-oriented payment for subsidy or whatever. And while we need also to consider the means that the farmers are using and the method that they are, the practices they are developing in the field. So we need to find a mixture of both. And remote sensing is very interesting because you can check what farmers are doing and also you can check the relation with the real result you got in the field. And just to finish on that, we are organizing on the 19th of March a webinar on MRV tools that we have a study with about 30 tools different, and we will be more than happy to provide this information to all the people that wish. It will be available on our website soon about the tools available, paid or with fee or without fee, according to the need that you have, of course, and of course, the reliability that you need. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Antoine, the connection between biodiversity, soil biodiversity, and cover cropping. Tell us more.
So you have two things. One, you have the diversity above the soil, like the wildlife, for example. After, you have the diversity in the soil. And in this case, what we can say, it's a soil with permanent cover, with always a living plant on the soil. It's always better to keep the diversity in the soil. More you have a green plant on the soil, it's better. Every time. Then after, for the cover crop, but not only for the cover crop, but also for the cash crop, each crop will have an impact on the soil diversity. That's some study in progress for that, where we need to build our knowledge for that, because it's a very difficult topic to understand how our cover crop will impact the biodiversity in the soil. There is some side effect, for example, because sometimes the biodiversity you will increase by cover crop could decrease yield potential of the next crop. In this case, we need to be very careful, and it's some in progress on that.
Florence, you wanted to say something here.
Yes, just to add something on that topic. Cover cropping, it's one of the best practices for soil health, but also carbon farming and regenerative agriculture. But it's not so simple to choose the best type of cover crop in the rotation for what type of benefits and co-benefits. The best is really to don't try something without any information. The best is to talk with experts. What about the best thing to do, but also the best type of implementation and the destruction date on the best stage to do that. Because you have a lot of co-benefits bringing by the cover crop, but you can have deep benefits. That means you can have a real impact on your soil biodiversity, yes, but also on your yield for your next crop. So just be careful when you are using cover crop. It's one of the best thing in this carbon farming practices, but please have a look on all the benefits and the benefits of this cover crop. Don't try to just put some triticale after your crop and don't follow the best stage for the termination.
Antoine?
It's always the question we have between the regulatory, the law cover crop and the agronomic cover crop. In fact, when we have some disadvantage with cover crop, it's when the farmer use it only because of the regulation. And they don't care of the benefits.
So I'm going to ask all of you to make some comments around how the business case for this is going to take it further. And that could be a reference to carbon markets, to price premiums, to whatever is required. I'd like all of you to outline how we're going to make this happen in terms of incentives. But before we do that, Florence, there's a number of questions in the chat about Bayer's role here. You know, this is something you're used to hearing. You get accused of being more of the problem than the solution, etc. Perhaps you could just give us a kind of high level response to that. I've worked with your company a number of times in sessions like this, and I see a real energy there to move from inputs to successful outputs and outcomes as a company for agriculture. So what is your response when you see things like this, and where is it taking the company over the next 5 years or so?
Bayer also have this own objective regarding climate change. So I am also working with my colleagues on the seed production, for example, to trying to have a better picture of the impact of the practices of the seed producer on the carbon footprint of the company. So this is a part. We are also in our team where we bring some expertise, some advice. We are not there to promote one product or one other product. We manage some carbon projects, focusing on the sustainability of this project. I'm very happy to work on Bayer because I am the freedom to operate today on my job. I don't have any pressure or any question from my colleague regarding my agronomic advice provided to the farmer. And that's great to have this freedom.
Thank you. So in the next 4 minutes, I'm going to go around the room, start with Antoine, then I'll come to Florence, then Andrew, and then Paul, you can finish as you started. How are we going to make this happen? Is it the basket of solutions? What are those likely to look like in terms of whether it's carbon markets, regulation, or price premiums, incentives, etc.? Let's finish off with talking about how we can make this happen for more farmers like Andrew and help Andrew go further. Antoine, why don't you start us off?
As you understand, I think you understand I'm a technical guy. So to have big picture, a big view, a global view, as I said, I will explain, I will say it another time, it's to share our knowledge because I'm a technical guy for the cover crop. I know how to grow cover crop. I know it. But we need to transfer this knowledge to the farmer and all we can provide to make it more understandable for them to have benefit by cover crop. And what we are looking for and what I hope is to be more able to share our knowledge and to make a better cover crop.
Florence, some final thoughts from you.
We are talking about a very complex topic. In 1 hour, it's not enough. In one life, maybe not enough. So we are learning every day. So it's really important to stay very humble on that topic because we don't know everything. We need to test and learn again and again, trying new thing, use new tool, new MRV, new models, but stay the foot in the boots with the farmer.
Thank you. Succinct. Andrew, what do you need to make this work?
I think ultimately, we are global commodity producers, we grow grains, we sell very little of what we produce direct to consumer. But ultimately, the consumer is going to have to pay for the uplift and what we're doing for the environment. I absolutely believe that we can continue to produce good, healthy, nutritious food for all the people in this world at the same time as looking after the environment we all live within. And we have to do that. I don't think it's an either or. I think that both outcomes can be achieved. I really do. With a few tweaks, we're all aware of the problems and we as farmers can definitely be part of the solution.
Thank you, Andrew. Paul, let me give you the final word.
Yes, I will build on what Andrew just said. I completely share with it. We need to define a new way to produce things. We had the old model with the Green Revolution. Now we need to have what the people call the double Green Revolution, whatever. But we need to include the farmers in the process, listen to what they have to say, because there are a lot of knowledge and a lot of wisdom in what they are doing. We need, first of all, to inform the consumer correctly and accept to pay the right price for the right products to the farmers, because that's where they're living are. And on the top of that, using the public money to incentivize through the technical accompaniment and economical accompaniment for the transition, and also pay for the ecosystem services that the farmers are rendering to the society in storing carbon in the soil and maintaining biodiversity and so on.
Well, thank you, Paul. Thank you, Antoine. Thank you, Florence. Thank you, Andrew. And thank you, Lionel, at the beginning. It's been a fascinating conversation. This is part of a series of conversations we're going to be having, so there'll be more of them over the next few months. And we have two big conferences coming up from Innovation Forum in May at the Future of Food in Amsterdam and then the Future of Food in Minneapolis. Please do have a look at those and join us, if you can, in person to discuss these issues together. Thank you once again, and we will be in touch.